I needed to understand why does my creator give me all these feelings, and at the same time, me being a dedicated Muslim, I'm going to go to hell. So there was a pressing need personally to study Islam and to find out the answers for myself.
All I long for is someone to love. Don't make love to me. I guess you'll find me coming soon to a small town near you.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Burundi's Senate rejects an anti-sex law, a gay South African imam's scholarship charms his critics, and an acoustic couple, a sultry genre bender, and an independent soloist in the audiophile. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending February 21st, 2009. The Senate of the Central African nation of Burundi has overwhelmingly defeated a move to make homosexuality a criminal offense. The lower house approved the measure in November, generating sharp criticism from several international human rights groups and the UN Program on HIV/AIDS. The Senate deleted the criminalization of homosexuality and major reforms of the country's legal system. The new legislation maintains a ban on the death penalty and protects women and children from all forms of violence, especially sexual violence. Burundi was racked by civil war from 1993 until elections in 2005 restored an ostensibly democratic political system. Several grandstanding politicians and religious leaders have blamed homosexuality for many of the country's ills. Michelle Sidibe, the executive director of the joint UN program on HIV/AIDS, praised the Senate for not criminalizing homosexuality, noting that it would have driven gay men further underground in an already disapproving society, making them even harder to reach with HIV/AIDS education and treatment programs. The penal code reforms now return to the lower house for final approval.
A three-day forum in Hong Kong this week addressed the soaring rate of HIV/AIDS among gay and bisexual men in Asia. It ended with delegates calling for countries in the region that outlaw homosexual acts to decriminalize them. Organizers issued a statement saying that highly prohibitive legal frameworks against homosexuality are fueling an AIDS epidemic in Asia among men who have sex with men, which by some estimates number up to 10 million. Forum participants said the alarming spike in HIV infections is being driven by younger people who aren't practicing safe sex and by a lack of awareness among one of the disease's most vulnerable groups, gay and bisexual men, in countries that continue to stigmatize them. Edmund Settle from the United Nations Development Program noted that a number of Asian countries are former British colonies that have maintained a Victorian-era law against so-called crimes against nature. India's High Court is currently considering an effort to overturn such a law. Chinese activist Zhen Li praised his government for decriminalizing homosexuality in 2001 and told a post-forum news conference that as long as these laws are in effect, it will push people into dark places.
Meanwhile, gays and lesbians came into the light on Valentine's Day on the streets of Beijing in a rare display of public outreach. According to a report by the Reuters news agency, about 30 people gathered on a street in the Chinese capital near Tiananmen Square to stage mock wedding photo sessions and pass out roses, along with pink-colored handouts urging support for marriage equality. The activists drew smiles and an occasional scowl from passers-by. Organizers said similar events took place in three other cities. One Beijing participant, who used the name Dana, told Reuters that, "Through today's event, I want to tell everyone that there are a lot of us around them, they just can't see us, and that we are the same as everyone else." While there are fledgling gay night spots in Beijing and Shanghai, homosexuality remains a subject that's rarely addressed publicly in China.
Elsewhere, Bolivia's new constitution, approved by 61% of voters last month, bans discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. It came into force on February 7th. New York-based Latino activist Andre Duque told gay journalist Rex Wagner that an article titled Fundamental Rights and Guarantees reads, "The state prohibits and punishes all forms of discrimination founded on the basis of sex, skin color, gender, age, sexual orientation and gender identity, origin, culture, nationality, citizenship, language, religious beliefs, ideology, political or philosophical affiliation." But Duque said the new constitution also defines marriage as exclusively between a man and a woman, and it was unclear if the LGBT anti-bias protections apply within a parallel tribal justice system that was also established by the new constitution. Some 60% of Bolivians may fall under that jurisdiction.
Hungary's government has offered a new registered partnership bill to replace one that was struck down as unconstitutional just before it was to take effect on January 1st. The Constitutional Court overturned the previous partnership measure because it would have also given those marriage-like rights to unmarried heterosexual couples, violating the special protection granted to marriage by the Constitution. The new bill proposes registered partnerships only for same-gender couples and would grant them all the rights of marriage except adoption and the joint use of one spouse's last name. It's unclear if Parliament will pass the new bill. Hungary has had a minority government since the now opposition liberals left the governing coalition early last year. Activist Tomás Dombos believes that the bill has a high chance of being passed, saying that governing parties hardly ever vote against proposals by their own government, and the liberals fully support the new bill. It is, however, very hard to predict how delicate negotiations involved in running a minority government will affect voting on the bill.
In a rare bit of lesbi-gay positive news from a GOP-controlled U.S. state legislature, Indiana's Senate Republican caucus voted this week not to consider a proposal that would have constitutionally defined marriage as exclusively heterosexual. The resolution required approval by the Senate and House in two consecutive legislative sessions and, if approved, would then have gone before the voters. House Speaker B. Patrick Bauer said a similar measure introduced there will also not be considered. Indiana already has a so-called defense of marriage law that bans same-gender marriage and civil unions, but supporters of a constitutional amendment worry that it could be overturned by the courts. Two previous attempts to advance a heterosexual-only marriage amendment in the Indiana legislature died. On both occasions, it had passed the Senate only to fail in the House.
But five pieces of legislation to advance lesbi-gay civil rights in the state of Utah have failed. The group of bills under the umbrella title of the Common Ground Initiative would have repealed a section of the state's constitutional ban on same-gender marriage, granted limited marriage-like rights to same-gender couples in areas such as medical decision-making and inheritance, and provided employment and housing anti-bias protections. The measures had the support of Republican Governor John Huntsman, but were apparently derailed, at least in part, because of full-page ads in the state's major newspapers by a conservative group called America Forever that compared lesbians and gay men to druggies and hookers, condemned public displays of homosexuality, and called it anti-species behavior.
And finally, two gay-related sexual harassment lawsuits, thousands of miles apart, had decidedly different outcomes this week. A British labor tribunal awarded £62,500, about $90,000, to a gay man who was ridiculed for 2 years by a female coworker. She repeatedly made sexual advances and jiggled her breasts at him. Arwin Rondeau, a 46-year-old security guard at London's Heathrow Airport, told the tribunal that the harassment didn't stop after 42-year-old co-worker Lucy Chilton was told that he is gay. He said on one occasion she put his hand on her breast and said, "You wouldn't know what to do with a woman anyway." After several spurned advances, Chilton then accused Rondeau of an inappropriate sexual behavior, which led to his suspension. Even after her claims were determined to be false, no action was taken against Chilton. Rondeau said that she was, in fact, eventually promoted. Dr. Neil Brenner, a consultant psychiatrist at North London's Priory Hospital, testified that Rondeau clearly has been through a very traumatic experience. He feels he has been treated like a criminal, even though he has been exonerated. Rondeau, who's taking medication for severe depression and had to move, told reporters that he was pleased with the outcome, but that it wasn't the money that was important. It was justice that I wanted, against her and management, for what I have been through every day for the past 2 years.
But a San Diego, California jury decided that four firefighters were sexually harassed because they were ordered to participate in the local LGBT Pride Parade and ordered the city to pay them a combined total of $34,300. The plaintiffs had originally each sought $1 million in damages. They claimed that they were the victims of vulgar sexual gestures and lewd comments and forced to watch what their attorney called barely clothed men and women simulate sex acts and touch themselves and one another while riding in a fire engine at the July 2007 parade, which drew about 150,000 spectators. A crew that had volunteered to ride in the parade pulled out after the captain's mother died. The fire department then ordered the crew in the city's Hillcrest area, home to the large LGBT population where the parade is held, to fill in. Days later, Fire Rescue Chief Tracy Jarman apologized to the firefighters, and the department changed its policy to make participation in future parades strictly voluntary. San Diego Pride Parade organizers issued a statement saying that the mini-sized payout the jury awarded for emotional distress to the firefighters speaks volumes about the so-called notion that they endured severe or pervasive trauma while wearing earphones, sitting 6 feet off the ground inside a fire truck with the windows rolled up and a roaring diesel engine powering them along a one-mile parade route. This is the same parade route followed by hundreds of public safety and law enforcement officers annually who are unconditionally welcomed with applause by cheering crowds. The city of San Diego is considering an appeal of the verdict.
That's News Wrap for the week ending February 21st, 2009. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
Openly gay writer Dustin Lance Black won the Best Original Screenplay Oscar this week for dramatizing the last years in the life of Harvey Milk. Hear Dustin's heartfelt acceptance speech for the first time or again, comments by Best Actor winner Sean Penn, and more next time on This Way Out. And later in this program, a dynamic duo, a multi-genre performer, and a grassroots soloist serenade the audiophile. But first... Just like the Hebrew Scriptures and the New Testament, the Holy Quran contains verses that lead traditional clerics to condemn homosexuality outright. But there are those rare Islamic spiritual leaders, or imams, who are gay. One of the first to come out publicly was Imam Musin Hendricks in South Africa. This Way Out correspondent and Radio Netherlands human rights reporter Eric Boschemann asked him how he manages to resolve the apparent contradictions.
That's one of the reasons why I went to study, because I wanted to clear up the contradiction. I grew up in a very staunch Muslim home, so it was preached that homosexuality is completely wrong and you're going to go to hell for that. So I needed to understand, why does my Creator give me all these feelings and at the same time, me being a dedicated Muslim, I'm going to go to hell. So there was a pressing need personally to study Islam and to find out the answers for myself. Only at the age of 29, when I came out, did I really put all that information together and said to myself, look, this is what I understand from it, and this is what I'm going to be following.
What did you understand?
I understood that the whole story of Sodom and Gomorrah, as it is related in the Quran, has nothing to do with sexual orientation. Homosexuality and sodomy, they are two distinct things. Sodomy, according to the Quran, in the last example that God puts of the angels that came down as handsome, disguised as handsome young men, the test around that, how the men of the city of Sodom and Gomorrah came rushing towards them, it was nothing to do with consensual sex. They were out to molest these men. So it's got no relation to sexual orientation. And this was my conclusion.
So basically, are you saying that Muslim scholars have misinterpreted or are misinterpreting the Quran?
I wouldn't say they have misinterpreted. I think they have interpreted it with the information that they had at that time. Unfortunately, there hasn't been research done after the 9th century.
Let's come back to you. You said that you came out when you were 29 years old, but before then you actually got married, didn't you?
Yes, I got married when I was 23, and I was married for 6 years. I've got 3 kids out of the marriage as well. But the reason why I got married was because my society says that every person that studies Islam to become an imam, he should be getting married. And if I did not go that way, I would always worried and thought maybe if I did get married, then I would have been straight by now. I went through that, and 7 days before the wedding, I actually called my wife one side and I said to her, look, I have to tell you something because I can't go into a relationship with you like this, a commitment like this, without you knowing who I really am. And so I told her, and she was quite furious. And I said to her, look, you don't have to respond right now. Go home and think about it. But the night she called me and she said, look, I'm in love with you. I want to, you know, help you to solve this problem. And I was like, okay, let's do this together. But it wasn't long down the line, about a year in the marriage, that I realized that I just cannot connect with a woman. Unfortunately, by that time, she already was pregnant with the one child. And then when the child came, I felt that maybe it's necessary to stay in the marriage for the sake of the child. And then the other two, I don't know how they happened, but they happened. After 6 years, we both just felt that we were not serving each other in the relationship. And so we broke it up.
And is it at that moment that you actually came out to other people?
Yes, because of a culmination of a lot of pressures, social pressures, personal, religious. It was just too overwhelming for me to live this double life. Well, the first person I needed to come out to was my mother. And if she was okay with it, I didn't really care about what other people think. And a month after I got divorced, my mother came to find out that I was divorced, and she asked me, I hear that the reason why you divorce is because you, and she couldn't say the word gay. And I finished the sentence for her and she fainted. But the next day when she came into my room and we discussed it, and she says, look, I cannot accept this. We'll have to find ways of how to make you change this. And I said, Mother, I've been struggling with this for more than 20 years. I think I need to help you to find ways to accept it. She said, but I cannot accept it. My religion doesn't allow me to accept it. And I cannot accept personally what you're trying to do. You want to change me. And she could see at that time that I was very serious about it. And I was prepared to cut the relationship with my mother. And then she sat up and then she said, okay, well, show me what do you understand about it. And I took the opportunity ever since to bring my friends to my mother, my gay friends. Every time when there's something on TV about homosexuality, I would force her to watch it. I would bring articles for her to watch it. And when I got into my first relationship, I moved to another city, Johannesburg. And my mother came to visit us and she spent 10 days with us. And when she left after the 10 days, she said, I don't see any difference between your relationship and a straight relationship because you both fight like husband and wife. So that for me was a confirmation that she's come to accept it.
Do you notice that attitudes are changing in the Muslim community in South Africa?
I think in the last 5 years, there has been more discussions and debates around homosexuality in our community than ever before. Just the mere fact that there has been no strong opposition towards these debates, I think for me it's an indication of some sort of acceptance. It just can't happen publicly right now. We recently also had a Muslim culture seminar at the Wits University where a couple of academics, Muslim academics, delivered their speeches and I also delivered mine. And it was very well accepted amongst them. But some of them commented and said, look, we support your work, we just can't say it publicly because of our affiliation to other organizations in the community.
Do you think that you can talk about this subject in the Muslim community because this is South Africa? It's not one of the more conservative countries like Pakistan or Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. I think the Muslim community understands that if they do oppose homosexuality publicly, that they could get in trouble. So I guess we're kind of blessed in South Africa to be able to do this work.
How do people treat you in general when they know that you're gay and you're Muslim?
I don't know if it's my charm, but I do get lots of respect.
That was Muslim Imam Mohsin Hendricks of South Africa in conversation with Radio Netherlands reporter Eric Boschemann.
There's nothing so international as a powerful idea. I'm Edmund White. It is the overwhelming international flavor of the lesbian and gay rights movement that has proved so powerful over the past couple of decades. And one radio program has been there to record, to inform, and to entertain. So please keep listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine on this station.
Extra, extra, read all about it, extra.
Have you checked our website for the latest This Way Out update? For a review of recent programming and behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show, just log on to www.thiswayout.org.
A A married musical match looks for its live sound, a sultry Texas genre bender tries something soulful, an independent kind of guy goes out on his own, and they all wind up in this edition of The Audiophile.
2008 was a good year for the duo Jason and DeMarco. Hi, I'm Chris Wilson.
I'm J.D. Doyle, and you're listening to Audiophile. They not only released a new CD called Safe, but also got married.
All I long for is someone to love, who understands me, who sees me as I am.
Also in 2008, a documentary was released about them called We're All Angels, but of course the music is the message.
For years our fans have been telling us how much they love our music and how much they love our albums, but they've also said that there's something about a live show where the energy's through the roof.
And on our new album, we decided that we were going to bring the band into the studio with us so we could capture this live acoustic sound on our new album, Safe.
Your mind said tomorrow will be brighter still.
Find out more about the album Safe at www.jasonanddemarco.com.
Ginger Lee comes from a long line of Texas artists, and adding to that history is her seventh album called Don't Be Shy.
Take my breathing, take my beating, take the belly under my dress. Take my bleeding, take my babies, take the brain inside my head. Leave me with nothing but my pride. Honor me a thousand times more than your brother, more than your mother, more than your lover you married last night.
The music of Ginger Lee crosses many genres and is a bit hard to quantify, as she quickly tells us.
My new album, Don't Be Shy, is much jazzier than my older records, but it still contains various genres. Like I've always done, I'm sort of known for various genres. The theme across the album is that it's very sexy and sultry and a little bit more urban, and really tapped into the part of my voice that's a little more soulful and, like I said already, jazzy.
You know, sky-rise condos are coming up on every corner like weeds, and this city is growing like the love between you and me. But I'm not here for the city. I'm here for you and me.
You can get more information about Ginger Lee and her album, Don't Be Shy, at www.glee.com. That's the letter G, L-E-I-G-H.com.
The movie Short Bus may have blasted Jay Brannon into the spotlight, but we much admire his new album, named after his anti-war song, Goddamned.
Applying moisturizer in the microwave window. For the 10th time, he should have called me an hour ago. Would he be here with flowers if I lived in Arizona? They say there's no love left in the big cities. It's kind of true. I guess you'll find me coming soon to a small town near you. I'll sell my guitar so I can buy myself a tractor.
Jay is an independent artist doing his own thing, even, as he told his fans in a YouTube video, down to self-financing this album.
I've gotten a lot of emails saying congratulations on the record deal, and I'm glad the executives have finally come to their senses, etc. And I just wanted to clear something up, actually. I paid for this record myself, using the money that you guys have given me through buying songs on iTunes and through CD Baby and Napster. I've saved all that money and I just put it into this album. There's really no label here. There's no executives. I am the record label, Jay Brannon.
He said I could spend the night. I said thanks, but that's all right. You can paint your number on my face, but I'm not into sleeping at someone else's place. I'm bow-legged and starving, but walking home happy like this marked moment when I felt freedom ring. I've got my laptop for pleasure and my guitar for pain. Love's a buried treasure, but I don't need love to feel this way. Yay. Yay.
Find out more about the CD Goddamned at www.jbrannon.com. And Brannon is spelled B-R-A-N-N-A-N.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can write to us at 594 Sawdust Road, number 273, Spring, Texas, 77380, or by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiofile.org.
Audiophile is produced by J.D. Doyle, Chris Wilson, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Chris Wilson. Keep listening.
Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Chris Wilson, Michael LeBeau, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Edmund White, Sherry Lund, and Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. Thanks also to Eric Boschermann and Radio Netherlands. Jason and DeMarco, Ginger Lee, and Jay Brannon performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can support our work, hear our podcasts, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alerts, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening. I'm KLAI, Fort Bragg, Laytonville, Willits, California, 4NAG, Yeppoon, Queensland, WDIY, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.